You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Tonight on ESPN2, our WNBA doubleheader tips off with the defending champion Mystics trying to keep their playoff hopes alive against the Lynx. That's 8 Eastern, and it's followed by Asia Wilson and the Aces taking on the Fever. Both games are on ESPN2 and the ESPN app. And with that, we welcome you back once again to Get Up. We come to you live this morning from the Seaport District at Pier 17, brought to you by Chase Greeny. Dan Graziano here in our studio for the first time in 173 days. It's wonderful to be back in New York, but we have the usual array of outstanding analysts ready to go on a very busy Tuesday morning in sports. So let's get to it. It is time to get up with the Claw, which made the biggest play of the night by far. In another thriller in the bubble, wait until you see how this one ended. Then Cam addresses the elephant who spent 20 years in the room. You need to hear what he said about replacing Tampa Tom. We're going live to Foxborough. And it is the glitziest division in the sport. Who wins the NFC South? I will tell you, and spoiler alert, it's not who everyone else thinks. Answers to all the questions on this Tuesday morning as we get up with you starting right now with our game of the night to the NBA's bubble. And a good one. Nuggets, Clippers, pick it up in the third. Nuggets and Jokic are up by 3. And watch Jokic. No good on the shot. Jokic with the rebound. Oh, and it's a touchdown. The one-hand pass. Jeremy Grant throws it down. Nuggets up 5. Later in the third, Nuggets up 7. Can't leave Jokic alone. He's got the range. He gets the change. He had 32 last night. Nuggets up 10. Less than a minute to go in the quarter. Nuggets lead is 1. Ball's going to find Michael Porter. And Michael Porter, oh, with authority, is going to find Montrezl Harrell. Porter Jr. at 18 off the bench. Look at the elevation and the slam. Can't see that one enough times. Nuggets up 4 after 3. Fourth quarter, 8 minutes to go. Clippers down 5 when they've needed Paul George the last few games. He's been there. 3 of his 32. Clippers within a deuce. Under 5 to go. Still a two-point game. Leonard, Zubats. Oh, he throws it down. This one's on Paul Millsap. They were dishing out posters last night in the bubble. Clippers up 1 after the foul shot. 2 minutes to go. Clippers up 4. Lou Will. Oh, he's been big through the traffic. Clippers up 6. Under 2 to go in the game. Nuggets down 6. Jamal Murray. Oh, he's trying to throw it down. But watch what Kawhi Leonard does to block this shot. Give me a good close look at the Claw. Look at the one hand. Look at the one finger block from the other side. It is the middle finger of Kawhi Leonard, literally and figuratively, stuffing the Nuggets in their place. And the Clippers hold on to win. They take a 2-1 series lead in the bubble.
The game came down to one of the two teams was going to play some defense. And for 3.5 quarters, you know, both teams were basically scoring. And then the last 6 minutes, it was our defense. I thought that play by Kawhi was amazing. I didn't know it was with one finger. I thought he just blocked it.
I mean, there's no moral victories. You know, this is a playoff. We should have won the game. That's how I feel. But we lost tonight. I mean, we didn't win the game. We have to regroup and get ready for game 4.
That's a really good game. And again, we know how good Kawhi is. But this Clipper team basically goes as Paul George goes in the first 4 games of these playoffs. George was shooting under 30% from the floor and from deep. Over the last 5, he's increased his scoring by 9 points a game, and his shooting is up 20% across the board, and they just look like an entirely different team. And so my basketball crew this morning is Timmy Legler and RJ, who's in the bubble. And, you know, Timmy Legs, the first thing that we heard Doc Rivers say there was, the game's going to come down to one of these teams making one stop. And what it actually came down to was one finger, the one finger block from Kawhi Leonard. What do we say about that, Legs? Have you ever seen anything quite like that?
No, I haven't. And in real time, you're watching it, and you know it was an amazing play because you could see Kawhi Leonard went straight up when it happened, like a bang-bang play. And then when you see the replay and you see what he actually did and how long his hand stays on this basketball until the very last second. He's got one finger on it to prevent this ball from going in. And if you're Jamal Murray, you just got to be in a state of shock at that point, because he turns the corner. He had a rough fourth quarter. He finally has an opportunity where he thinks he's got an easy finish at the rim. And here comes Kawhi Leonard to put that big mid up there and meet him. And it just shows you the greatness of Kawhi Leonard to have a rim protector as your 6'6", 2 guard, and to make a play like that that can now turn a series and give you the lead. It's really just an amazing play. And Kawhi Leonard, we know, this is one of the best defensive players in the league, and he made one of the key defensive plays of the game for his team.
And you always know he's going to be there when you need him. Richard Jefferson, we talked a little bit a moment ago about Paul George and how he has been there now as they've needed him. They needed every one of his 32 points last night. What have you seen has been the difference in George the last five games or so? And what do you think it means if he continues to play like that?
Well, I think he got some stuff off of his chest. I think he was so stressed. He talked about, you know, how the bubble was affecting him mentally and emotionally. And, you know, ever since he really had that conversation, he has been far more consistent. He hasn't been great every single game, but he has been very, very impressive. And it's not just his offense they need. They need his defense. They need his defense to be high level. You think about if they're able to continue on and the types of players that they're going to have to play, whether it's LeBron James or James Harden, Russell Westbrook, or on the other side, any one of Boston players or any one of Miami's players, or if Toronto's able to push on, they're going to need his defense as much as his offense. And so they, as much as we want to focus in on the offense, as long as he stays locked in defensively, I think his offense will come.
Okay, and so Legs, just very quickly to you, do the Clippers look like a championship team to you right now? The way they're playing, with George getting it heated up, they get different contributions from different people on a different night, and they got the one-finger defensive play at the end. Do they look like championship stuff to you in the bubble?
At times. The thing has been with them, they haven't been showing it consistently since the restart. But look, we know this is the deepest team in the league. I picked them to win a championship. I'm not wavering from that. But they haven't consistently played at that level. I think actually Miami and Boston probably have both been much more consistent than either of the top teams in the Western Conference. But the Clippers have the talent, they've got the defense, and if Paul George is playing like that offensively, they're going to win a championship.
Okay, guys, sit tight with me here. RJ, I'll be back in a couple of minutes as we will have more hoops as we continue. But we are 2 days until the kickoff of the NFL season, and we are 5 days away from Cam Newton taking the reins behind center against the Dolphins as the new quarterback of the Patriots. It'll be the first time Newton starts a game since week two of last season. Here's Cam on the pressure of replacing Tom Brady.
No, sir. No, sir. And, you know, I think the world of Tom, and just now having a, not more say of a person of a bird's eye view, but, you know, really knowing the people who really knew him on a day-to-day basis and how they speak so highly of him, and, you know, just understanding the greatness that you hear of a person like that, and for you to ratify that and hear more things, it's just great to, number one, hear. But as far as pressure, no, sir.
No, sir, he says, on feeling pressure. Here's Mike Reese, who joins us live from Gillette Stadium, covers the Patriots for us for so long. What are you hearing, Mike, from inside the team about how this offense is going to look different with Cam rather than Tom?
Good morning, Greeny. It has been fascinating to listen to offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels talk about how this offense is evolving. And one of the points McDaniels has made is that he feels it's a benefit for him to have gone through this before without Tom Brady. It's provided him insight, because the last thing he wants to do is put Cam Newton in a position where he can't succeed, saying, hey, Cam, this is what Tom did. Do this. So he spent the last couple months getting to know what Cam Newton does well, and he says that's been a fun process because there are things Newton does that he has never coached before.
Yeah, there are things he does that no quarterback has ever done before in the whole history of the game. So how might his style of play, would you imagine, help the wide receivers as compared to what we saw last year and before?
Well, Greeny, one of the things about the Patriots offense under Tom Brady is that receivers had to run really precise routes. And there's a thought process among some in the organization is that that was what's led them to struggle developing young receivers. So now you bring in Cam Newton, a different type of quarterback who has movement skills, who can extend plays a little bit. And the thought is that maybe that takes a little bit of that burden off the receivers, and that would be critical. Because after Julian Edelman, Greeny, I mean, who is Cam Newton going to be throwing the ball to? Not a lot of household names here for the Patriots.
All right, Mike Reese again there for us, 5 days away from the debut. Thank you very much. Meanwhile, remember, my football crew back in with me this morning. And, Greg, I know you have a tape. I'm going to get to you in a second. But very quickly, Marcus, when you hear Cam say, "No, sir, I don't feel any pressure replacing Tom," what do you think?
I love it. Gee, listen, this is what people forget. Cam Newton has his own personality, his own story, his own greatness in the NFL already. This is not your conventional guy coming in, taking on a new job and trying to recreate something that was already there before. Cam Newton is going to be 100% authentically Cam Newton. And that's exactly what you want. And I was happy to hear from Mike that Josh McDaniels has embraced the way that Cam plays, because now what you get is a different era. Nobody should be comparing Cam Newton to Tom Brady. Cam stands alone just as well as Tom Brady stands alone, and I can't wait to see how they deploy him offensively, because if he's healthy, it's going to be a mess in New England in a good way this year.
Well, you're the third person to say that now on this show, including Graziano and Mike Reese, these grizzled reporters who are actually excited to see what this offense looks like. So we asked Greg McElroy to put together a tape. Greg, what would you imagine this offense might look like?
Well shockingly, guys, there weren't a lot of design quarterback runs in the offense the last couple years. So I had to go all the way back to 2016 with Jacoby Brissett under center for the New England Patriots. And what we saw from Josh McDaniels was misdirection. Not a ton of quarterback design runs, but look, you fake the pitch out the left to Edelman, then you got option to the play side. They over-pursue defensively. He cuts it up in the A-gap. He gains 15 yards. I love this play right here, because when you have a mobile quarterback and you run RPOs, you're going to get a lot of man coverage. It's exactly what you get here, man coverage. Look at all the eyes in the backfield. You pull the right guard around to secure the edge. Man coverage downfield. I mean, Kareem Jackson's focused on covering the backside X wide receiver. No one even realizes that Brissett has the football. He breaks free for a 27-yard touchdown. So these are just a couple of the gadget plays that we saw scattered throughout that game plan. Jacoby Brissett against Houston that night had 8 carries. I don't expect Cam to even have that many. Maybe 5, maybe 6. But those 5 or 6 will be difficult to game plan for and will likely be something that would give gray hairs to defensive coordinators in the week leading up. So expect RPOs, expect a lot of man coverage, and expect Cam to hopefully have his best season in quite some time.
Jeff, you know what a really good offense looks like. You've been a part of a lot of them. Do you think this will be one?
I do think this will be one. And I'll tell you, I love what Josh McDaniels just said. I mean, talking about it's brought him energy. He's looking at things a new way. You think about multiple backs in the backfield, things you can do. It didn't matter. Last year, everybody talked about Tom Brady's worst year because he had no one to throw to. So what pressure can there be, right? You got Edelman. You got N'Keal Harry, who's a first-round draft pick, who really didn't do much last year. Other than that, man, you can move running backs around. You can move receivers around. You can be as creative as you want to be. I think that takes all the pressure off. Everybody understands Tom Brady spent 20 years, man, in one place. We're never going to have the conversation of Cam Newton versus Tom Brady in New England. It's always going to be Brady. So who cares? Now we're talking about winning in the 2020 season. What can Cam Newton bring to this offense? I'm excited that they're teaming up. I can't wait to see Cam Newton, especially healthy, what he can do, because Brissett is nowhere near Cam Newton and all the things that he could potentially do. So I get extremely excited about the potential there.
So, Marcus, somewhat quickly, if you're a defensive player and you're playing them this Sunday with no tape to look at, what are you focused on? What is the number one thing you're thinking about this weekend?
The number one thing I'm thinking about, G, is we have to stop Cam Newton, and we have no idea what the hell Josh McDaniels is going to do with this beast, this different animal. It's about to look totally different. This has to be the most nerve-wracking situation for a defensive coordinator and defensive players as there's been in a long time in the NFL. And I can't wait to see how they're going to try to defend it and what New England is going to do.
Me too. That is five people on this show who have said, I can't wait to see what it looks like. And I believe all five of you, it is going to be extremely interesting to see what this New England offense looks like post-Brady with Cam. Meanwhile, coming up here on Get Up, we have the very latest on the ankle of Giannis, upon whom absolutely everything may depend. We're going inside the NBA bubble for an update shortly. And then I have a little unsolicited advice for the Cowboys. I know exactly how they can win the whole thing this year, and I'll tell you what that is as we continue. It's Get Up on ESPN. Back on Get Up, let's run the bases around the action from the majors yesterday, beginning with Gene Segura of the Phillies coming to the plate in the 10th. Bang! Two-run shot. He drove in a career-best 5 runs on 4 hits, a 9-8 Philadelphia win over the Mets. Segura's 5 RBIs, the most by a Philly second baseman since Chase Utley 10 years ago. Meanwhile, Phillies are trying to catch Atlanta, who lost to Miami last night. Miguel Rojas had 4 hits for Miami, including a go-ahead double in the 10th right there. Atlanta leads the Phils by 2 games in the East. The Marlins are 3.5 back. And another awful night for the Yankees. The Blue Jays had a 10-run sixth, including that Danny Jansen grand slam. 12-7 the final. The Yanks have lost 6 of 7. They're just a game and a half up on the Orioles for the final playoff spot in the American League. Meanwhile, to the NFL. On the week the season begins, the Cowboys looking to rebound after a disappointing end to last year, losing to the Eagles week 16, missing the playoffs. They have a new head coach. They have a fabulous new weapon that everyone's all excited about in C.D. Lamb at wide receiver. And the conversation in Dallas seems to be all about this idea of having 3 1,000-yard receivers. Well, they don't need any advice from me, but I'm going to give them some anyway. This is something I like to call unsolicited advice, and it is as simple as this. Hey, Mike McCarthy, the way you win this year, Zeke Elliott needs to lead the league in rushing. You need to ride Zeke. The guy who owns your team decided to pay him when he didn't have to a couple of years ago. And the reason is because he's the reason you win. In 2016 and 2018, Zeke Elliott led the NFL in rushing. Both those years, the Cowboys won the division, and they were 3rd overall in time of possession. If you have 3 1,000-yard receivers, do you know what you also have? A lot of 3 and outs. You know what that turns into? A lot of bad days for your defense. So my unsolicited advice, with all the money you're paying Dak, and as good as your receiving core is, feed Zeke. It's as simple as that. That's what I think. My former Cowboy is Marcus Spears. What do you think?
You're right. You're right. And I fight this movement, G, because sometimes the game plan allows for you to do different things. But the bottom line is this. Dallas defense last year was overexposed because Dallas wanted to throw the ball a ton. They wanted to push the ball downfield, which resulted in a lot of 3 and outs, and the defense gave up a lot of plays. And I think sometimes we get so enamored with the conversation about Dak and this offense and how much success that they had that we didn't realize last year Dallas's defense was susceptible to a lot of things. And a big reason why they didn't have a lot of success because this defense gave up big plays. But with you saying feed Zeke, from a football standpoint, as a defensive player, there is nothing better to watch then when you on the sideline getting oxygen and water as your offensive line grinding it out and stepping on people's neck and continuing to hand the ball off. When I was in Dallas, I played with Larry Allen. Larry Allen had a sign like this where he would do this in the game and he would be letting everybody in the stadium know we about to run the ball down your throat and it ain't nothing you can do about it. Dallas needs to get back to that. So I'm with you. Feed Zeke and let everything else come off of that, and you can still have success on the outside.
Now, I never have to ask an offensive lineman if he thinks they should be running the ball, but I will anyway. Jeff Saturday, what do you think?
Man, I'm so fired up, Swaggoo. It's like he woke up. He had a cup of coffee. Everything's back to normal. That's what I'm talking about, my man. Run the rock. I don't need to hear about 3,000-yard receivers. I love that receivers want to have 1,000 yards. I don't care anything about that. But my man Zeke, to all the stats that you just said, Greeny, this is how you win football games in the NFL. And by the way, their offensive line is a little bit banged up. Guys aren't as healthy as they have been in the past. Not catastrophic injuries, but small. What you don't want to do is try to protect Dak Prescott from banged up guys. Move forward.
Move guys off the line of scrimmage. Let Zeke run behind his pads. We're going to be back and get back to win that division.
Graziano, let me ask you what you're hearing out of Dallas as far as the new offense with their head coach, but the same play caller. What do you expect as far as the run-pass situation?
I don't expect a drastically new offense in Dallas. They kept Kellen Moore as the coordinator for a reason, and I think Mike McCarthy will have some influence on it, obviously, given his background and his success. But I don't think much of the offense is going to change. I think they love what Dak Prescott gave them last year. Ezekiel Elliott was fourth in the league in rushing. It's not like he fell into the 25th place on that list. So I think they'll continue to try and be multiple, and especially to the point about the offensive line being banged up, I think they're going to have to be in order to make sure to keep defenses guessing.
What we can say about the history of Mike McCarthy, at least in Green Bay, and of course he had Aaron Rodgers, is they never ran the ball. They didn't run the ball in Green Bay at all. Very quickly, McElroy, what do you think? Do they need to run the rock, and what do you expect from Dallas?
It's a quarterback-driven league. Of course, we're going to listen to Spears and Saturday. Oh, the trenches. Oh, we're all about grinding it out. No. It's about your quarterback. That's why we just heard both of them just a little while ago say the Chiefs are the favorite to win the Super Bowl again. You can talk about running it all you want, but this offense is trying to win a Super Bowl. That's the ultimate goal. And if they don't empower Dak Prescott from start to finish and allow him to continue to grow and turn those three weapons that I think all are legitimate 1A, 1B, 1C wide receivers with Gallup, and I think Lamb is the steal of the draft, and of course Amari Cooper, then man, I'm telling you, this offense and the quarterback position especially is what carries you to Super Bowls, and that's ultimately the Cowboys' goal.
That's why you need a quarterback on the show every single day, because they'll say things like that, and then Marcus will look the way he looks, and Jeff will look the way he looks. In case you ever wonder, do all the other players in the league hate the quarterbacks? The answer is yes, and you just saw it, and you just saw why. All right, we will take a quick timeout. As we continue, we have an update on the condition of Giannis' ankle, plus I have an opinion on the Greek Freak that might just get Stephen A. Smith very upset. We'll talk about that with him next. Get up, ESPN. We are back on Get Up. Let's get up and go through some of the news around the world of sports yesterday. Oregon's offensive tackle Penei Sewell, the 2019 Outland Trophy winner, is opting out of the season to prepare for the draft. He is the number two overall prospect, according to Mel, behind only Trevor Lawrence. Meanwhile, how about Dustin Johnson yesterday? Won the FedEx Cup. That's $15 million, holding off Justin Thomas and Xander Schauffele at the Tour Championship. Johnson's the first number one seed at Eastlake to win the FedEx Cup since Tiger did it 11 years ago. Serena Williams, meanwhile, outlasted Maria Sakkari, who had beaten her 2 weeks ago. Serena wins yesterday at the Open 6-3, 6-7, 6-3. She gets to the U.S. Open quarters for the 12th consecutive time, trying to win her record-tying 24th Grand Slam title. And you will see U.S. Open action continue today on ESPN, noon Eastern, men's and women's quarters. Then the primetime coverage features the four-seed Naomi Osaka taking on Shelby Rogers. That's 7 Eastern on ESPN and on the ESPN app. The big news in the bubble is the ankle of Giannis Antetokounmpo. He continues to get treatment on the sprain. The coach, Mike Budenholzer, has not yet made a call on whether he will play tonight. Giannis is officially listed as questionable on the injury report. This obviously is critical with the Bucks down 3-1 in the series. There's Malika Andrews for us in the bubble. Malika, what do we know at this moment about the status of Giannis Antetokounmpo?
Well, when I saw Giannis yesterday, he was actually wearing a boot on that ankle still. It's the same boot that we talked about yesterday when we spoke. He was hobbling on it a little bit. He was walking a little bit gingerly. I saw him getting treatment yesterday, the treatment that you just alluded to, when he was at the Bucks' very short practice and film session. Mike Budenholzer said that he went through the Bucks' walkthrough, but they really didn't do a lot of on-court stuff at all. So obviously he did not participate in that. Now, yesterday, when we spoke with Mike Budenholzer, he said that he was still holding out hope. He knows that Giannis really wants to be out there with these guys. His ankle, when I saw it, didn't look all that swollen, but obviously I'm not a doctor, so they're continuing to do treatment today, and I expect this to be a very last-minute call because Giannis and this team really want him out here, but obviously his ankle is going to be the thing that dictates that.
Of course, and it's lose or go home, or win or go home. You know what I'm saying. They're down 3-1. So how would you describe the feeling around this one seed that practically everyone was picking to at least win the East, being one game away from elimination and with their superstar injured like this?
I mean, pick your adjective, Greeny. It's focused. It's determined. They're playing with a chip on their shoulder now. The sentiment that was repeated over and over and over again after their last win was that they really are playing for Giannis here. They said that Giannis put him on their back, on his back. Giannis has made sacrifices. Giannis's ankle wasn't 100%. There was a thought maybe that he wasn't going to play in game four, and he said that he is going to do it for his team anyway. So that is the sentiment that they have now. They want to go out there and do it for Giannis. And George Hill said yesterday, and this is just illustrative of who Giannis is as a person, that when George went out to help Giannis off the court, one of Giannis's last phrases to him was, "I should have dunked the ball," because then maybe if he had driven a little bit harder in his mind, he feels like he would have avoided that injury. So now this team wants to help him the way that Giannis has been helping them all season.
Malika Andrews, outstanding. And obviously, as soon as there is any word from down there, you will have it immediately. Meanwhile, I want to bring Stephen A. and Richard Jefferson into the conversation. And I'm going to do this change my mind thing in a minute. But first, I'd like to ask you both. Stephen A., good morning. I'll start with you. We saw the Bucks sort of rise up and Chris Middleton play huge after Giannis got hurt on Sunday. Do you believe they can keep their season alive tonight if Giannis doesn't play?
No.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Shopping for Mother's Day is usually a challenge because you wait until the last minute, but Macy's Gift Finder makes it incredibly fast and easy to find the right gift just in time for Mother's Day. Whether you're shopping for your sister's first Mother's Day or your fashionista mom who loves to make a statement, Macy's Gift Finder has so many great gift ideas that you can easily pick out something special to celebrate them both. You can shop by price, anywhere from $25 and under to $100 and under. You can also sort by category like fragrance, handbags, and more, or gift lists like for the mom who has everything, pre-wrapped gifts or gifts for grandma. Find top brands like Studio Pro Model Beats headphones, Polaroid cameras, and Samsung smart TVs. So what are you waiting for? Mother's Day is May 12th. It'll be here before you know it. Macy's has the perfect gift guide to make picking something for mom easy this year. Head to Macy's.com/giftfinder today. That's Macy's.com/giftfinder. Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Excellent.
Rick, you move on.
Richard?
Not him.
Sorry. Listen, we like people to be concise. Stephen A., that's as concise as it gets. You don't think they have a chance. Tell me why. Middleton scored 36.
No.
Malika just said that they want to carry him the way he has carried them.
Yeah, that sounds nice. That sounds really, really nice. Chris Middleton showed up, played like an all-star, played like the secondary option on the Milwaukee Bucks that everybody's been clamoring for him to play like. But in the end, here's what it comes down to. I don't think they're the better team. I think the Miami Heat are the better team. And I think that Miami Heat, once Giannis went down, so I think they sort of got a little bit lax and a little bit irresponsible and loose with the basketball, particularly loose defensively as well. And I don't think that's going to happen in game five. It's a nice story, but you'll need Giannis out there to win this game. I'd be shocked if the Miami Heat lost to the Milwaukee Bucks without Giannis on the court. A matter of fact, not only do I anticipate them winning, but I anticipate them winning convincingly, probably in the fourth quarter. It'll be tight for the first three quarters, and then they pull away.
Richard, you agree?
Yeah, I agree. Now, look, if there was a team, you would look at a team that has the MVP and has, you know, had the best regular season record for the last 2 years to come back from a down 3-0 situation. But ultimately, they're not playing great as a team. Giannis is not 100%. Do I think that Giannis should go out there and play? I think that's purely up to him. If he decides that his ankle is acceptable enough, if he's not risking injury, I just don't like, oh, he should play. Oh, no, the Bucks should sit him. At the end of the day, it's really about what Giannis feels. But is their team equipped to handle the aggression, the physicality of Miami? I don't think so. Not the way Miami has been playing and shooting the ball. So I don't see this going much more after tonight. Maybe if they can squeak out, but I think this is Miami series.
Okay, so that
I don't like what Richard just said. I'm not leaving it up to Giannis. It's too risky. I would remind everybody that in 2000, Grant Hill injured his ankle with about seven games to go in a regular season and insisted on playing, and then obviously re-aggravated it in like game two or something like that of a three-game first-round series in the postseason. And I think it was against Miami, if I remember correctly, and they got swept. Grant Hill was never the same, ever. Mm. The ankle is a very, very tricky situation.
That was a broken ankle. That was a broken ankle, Stephen A. There's a difference between an ankle sprain and a broken ankle. There's a difference between being hurt and injured. If he's only hurt and he can play.
Did he play after he injured it with seven games left in the regular season? Yes or no? Did he play?
Yes, but that's a broken ankle. There's a difference between a broken ankle and a sprained ankle, Stephen A. Come on.
Okay.
I'm not saying there's no difference. I'm saying you can't leave it up to the player.
That's fair.
Not in that situation. Hell no.
I also saw Isaiah Thomas
do some amazing things on a sprained ankle. Just saying.
In game six. And then game seven, he couldn't go. He could barely survive. Exactly.
Couldn't go.
You
couldn't go. I'm just giving you an example, Stephen A. I'm just giving you an example.
Right. I'm going to try and get my thing in here because the whole reason I wanted you guys today was this. So, Stephen A., I'm scared as I say this because you know me. I don't like debating with you because you're the best in the world at it. I'm going to make a statement that I think you're going to disagree with, but I have been saying this for a long time. Because if the Bucks lose tonight, we all know what the conversation is tomorrow on every talk show in America. Mm-hmm. Literally, this one and First Take and all the radio and everybody else is going to be, is Giannis leaving Milwaukee? And so, I have a feature here that I call Change My Mind. I'm going to make the following statement. I invite you to change my mind if you think you disagree. I believe it is best for the NBA long term if Giannis stays in Milwaukee. I think that a chain link fence is only as strong as its weakest link. And I think if the sport is better, even though everyone talks about the glamour teams and the glamour markets, with the Ja Morants in Memphis and the Zions in New Orleans and Giannis in Milwaukee. Stephen A., if you'd like to, change my mind.
Well, first of all, I don't feel like changing your mind, Greeny. I mean, it's really not about whether you're right or wrong. It's about who cares. Who cares how you feel? Guess what? Nobody cared how I felt about LeBron leaving South Beach to go back to Cleveland. That would have been better for Stephen A. In Stephen A.'s opinion, it didn't happen. Nobody cared. Okay, so why should they care about Mike Greenberg thinking it's best for Giannis to stay in Milwaukee? Of course, small market teams, you know what? You don't want them decimated and what have you because they lose marquee talent. You know what? The collective whole is more important than individual parts. We get all of that. And so the NBA, if you're in a small market and your team is a championship contender, that is a beautiful thing. But here's what I would tell you is more important than a star player staying in the small market. It's about ensuring that, guess what? You got stars in the Eastern Conference, because that time zone matters in terms of ratings and the overall health of the NBA. Just look at the ratings and how it was a struggle over the last year and a half or so because LeBron went out west. The fact that LeBron was in Cleveland mattered. Now, whether it's Cleveland or Miami, I mean, I'm here to tell you something right now. I'm choosing Miami, South Beach, all day, every day, twice on Sunday. Yes, I would, without hesitation. But to me, it's about the time zone just as much as it is about anything else. You need to have marquee talent in the Eastern time zone so they're seen more so than if they're out west.
Stephen A., your hometown is in the Eastern time zone. And you know that every one of your friends you grew up with and every one of my friends I grew up with are screaming at the TV right now, tell me Giannis is going to go to the Knicks. Is there any chance of that?
Oh, God.
No way in hell. No way in hell. No way in hell. No way in hell. And I'm rooting for Worldwide West, William Wesley, and Leon Rose, but ain't no way in hell that's happening. I don't believe that.
Richard, your reaction amused me. What do you think? Well, let's go back to the original thesis. Do you think that you were there in Cleveland with LeBron when they won championships?
My thing is this. Either they have to go get a high-level player to come play with Giannis. Giannis has to recruit a high-level player, which that doesn't seem like that's kind of Giannis's thing. So my thing is he doesn't have to leave Milwaukee, but ultimately there is a formula. This is not the old-school NBA where you stay in one place. It's the Reggie Millers. It's the Larry Birds. This is not that time, the Tim Duncan and Kobe Bryant. Players move. Players pair up because ultimately they're not judged to a certain degree by the MVPs. They're judged by how many championships you win. And only to do that is to be paired up with other great players. So you could do it through free agency, you could do it through recruiting, or your team can go do it via a trade. So those are the options for the Milwaukee Bucks. They have to go and get that talent, or Giannis has to help bring that in, or Giannis will potentially leave.
Stephen A., you talk to everybody. Can he get somebody there? Can he get another A-level player to come play with him in Milwaukee?
I don't think so. And listen, I like Milwaukee. I particularly like the job that the organization has done in terms of you go out there. They got their own mini version of L.A. Live, for crying out loud, to try to galvanize the folks that support the Milwaukee Bucks. And they come out there in droves. And I give them a lot of credit from an organizational perspective. I think they've done a wonderful job. But the bottom line is you're paying Chris Middleton $180 million. You're looking at him and you were anticipating that he was going to be that bona fide number two. What he did in game four, you anticipated he was going to be for Giannis for years to come. If that dude shows up on a night-in, night-out basis, I don't think they worry about losing Giannis, because I think ultimately Giannis wins. The problem is that hasn't been what Chris Middleton has done for the vast majority of his career. He's been a solid player, even a good player. But that bona fide number two star that Giannis need, with the ability to close the way Kobe did in 2000, when Shaq went out in game four or five, rather, against the Indiana Pacers, and Kobe Bryant had to pat the big boy and say, I got this, and took over. That's what a Giannis needs in Chris Middleton. And if Chris Middleton isn't going to be that guy, I don't see them being able to go out there and get somebody else to come to Milwaukee. I don't see it.
I leave it there. I had a very good time doing this. 18 minutes away from First Take with Stephen A. Richard is in the bubble, and we will see you guys both a little later in the day. Meanwhile, coming up here, it is the glitziest division in the sport. Who wins the NFC South? I'll tell you the answer. And spoiler alert, it's not who everybody thinks. That's next. Get up, ESPN. We are back on Get Up. Our division previews continue. The Buccaneers were 7-9 last year. They failed to win the NFC South since 2007. But, of course, now they have Tom Brady and are looking to overtake the Saints in the division. New Orleans has won the division each of the past three seasons. And according to Caesars by William Hill, they are the odds-on favorite to do it again, with Tampa Bay and all their new weapons just slightly behind them. That's what Vegas thinks. Here's what I think. The Panthers are playing the long game with their coach on a 7-year deal. They have the most productive back on the planet, and Teddy Bridgewater is an upgrade from what was the worst quarterback play in the league. But they would be last in most divisions, and definitely this one. The Saints have won the division 3 straight years. Michael Thomas caught a record 149 balls. Drew Brees is entering year 20. But call it a feeling, this ain't their year. They'll sneak into the playoffs as the 7th seed. The Falcons are much better than anyone thinks. Every player on their offense was a first-round pick, including Julio and Matty Ice, and now Todd Gurley. Atlanta wins 10 games. Two fewer than Tampa Tom. This is the most talent Brady has ever had around him. Ever. And the defense is great. The best in the sport the last 6 games last year. The Bucs win the South on their way to becoming the first team ever to host the Super Bowl.
That's right. I said it. I've got Tampa Tom and the Buccaneers winning the NFC South. Marcus, I will start with you. I'm trying to read the look on your face. You're a tough read. Swagoo, what do you think? Who you got in the South?
100% agree with you, G. I'm taking the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as well. Listen, I know we've had people talk about all of the snaps that Drew Brees has had and all of the work that they put in with Sean Payton. And ain't nobody going to give a damn about that when the game start. When the game start, can your playmakers make more plays than mine? And there's a hard argument you can make that Tampa Bay has the most playmakers. Now, I know we go crazy over Kansas City and what they have there, but Mahomes puts them over the top. But when you talk about skill position, Tampa Bay Buccaneers are as good as it gets in the NFL. And also, they were 7-9 last year. And G, say it with me, how many interceptions did they throw?
30.
30. When you throw 30 intercepts, you got 3 football players sitting on this show right now. Greg McElroy, Jeff Saturday. When you throw 30 interceptions, you're supposed to go 1-15. That's where you're supposed to go. So an already good team with the greatest quarterback to ever play, with 2 tight ends that can make plays and 2 wide receivers outside that can make plays, and you just added Leonard Fournette, it's the damn Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Okay. Marcus is on my side, and I feel good. Jeff, what side are you on?
I'm on the right side with you guys. What are you talking about? How good is this? How can you argue this point? If you look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I'm going to the other side away from the offense. This defense, you said it. Last 6 games last year, led the NFL. This team with Todd Bowles, just the look of the defense. If they can continue to stay productive on that side with turnovers, limiting runs, making people do the things that they did all at the end of last season. To your point, Swagoo, 30 interceptions is insanity. To go 7-9 with 30 interceptions is dang near impossible. And they pulled it out. Now you put all these guys to this organization. The only part of Tampa Bay that scares me is their offensive line and protecting Tom Brady. That is the only part that you would make any question. But here's the deal. Byron Leftwich says he and Tom Brady are having a bunch of discussions. Bruce Arians, they're going to limit those 7-step, even in play action, get the ball out of his hands to protect him for another play. If they do that, Bucks all the way, man.
And they did draft an offensive lineman, Brandon Wirfs, in the first round. All right, Dan Graziano, I saw your head drop. What do you think?
Nobody learns any lessons around here. We sat around this table last year and said the same stuff about the Cleveland Browns, right? Their skill position players could be among the best in the league. They were 7-9 last year, blah, blah, blah. I get it. No. It's my turn to talk.
No.
I get it. I get the difference between Tom Brady and Baker Mayfield and the difference between Bruce Arians and Freddie Kitchens. But the fact of, and by the way, Jeff Saturday is saying offensive line isn't that big a deal of all the people in the world to come on here and talk about, they'll get past that. Look, I think they look like a good team. I think they have a chance to be a very good team. We don't know what they look like on the football field together. We haven't seen it. We have seen the New Orleans Saints consistently over the last several years be one of the best teams in the league. I have to stick with the Saints until I see Tampa Bay in person.
All right. Not only does that make sense, but Graziano, by the way, can you put everybody up in the boxes, Cindy? Graziano just told me, you mind if I say this on the air? If you're wondering why he looks so good.
Say.
Dan Graziano's lost over 30 pounds since the last time we saw him. How about
Thank you.
From Graziano? Well done. All right, Greg McElroy, who you got in the NFC South?
I'm with Dan, and the new Dan, I guess. Congratulations, Dan. I'm with the New Orleans Saints, man. I think we have become such prisoners of the moment because of how they looked in the playoffs last year. When Drew Brees arguably had maybe the worst game of his career, And if you really look at that game, he was really the third best quarterback on the field between Cousins and Taysom Hill. We now have also heard from our very own Adam Schefter that Alvin Kamara and the Saints are close to a deal, so you know he's going to feel energized. They still have the best wide receiver, arguably, in the entire NFL. Their defense is still somewhat opportunistic, and I'm very encouraged by what we might see from that side of the football. And I think also, along with Dan's point, I do have concerns about Tampa Bay. Look, Tom Brady is a cerebral quarterback, maybe the best there's ever been at the line of scrimmage, but it's a completely new language that he's going to be speaking. And that, I think, takes a little time to get comfortable, regardless of how incredible he is. And I expect him to have a fantastic year. I expect him to win double-digit games and get to the playoffs without question. But I still think the New Orleans Saints, with their continuity, have a little bit more known commodities than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at this point. That's why I'm going to lean towards them in the South.
All right, so we have got sort of a split panel here. Let me go to the poll. Again, I've asked you on my Twitter page, at ESPN Greeny, to vote and let me know who you think is going to win the division. Right now, 56% say the Saints. America likes New Orleans. Right now, Tampa with 34% of the vote. We'll see how that feels. Again, these teams play each other Sunday in New Orleans. That could turn around in a big hurry if Brady looks good on Sunday. We'll find out. Meanwhile, First Take is coming up next. Max and Stephen A. debating whether or not the Ravens can win the Super Bowl if Lamar Jackson doesn't change his style of play. That's on First Take with Stephen A. and Max. They're coming up next. And following First Take today, our coverage of the U.S. Open continues here on ESPN. Men's and women's quarterfinal action. Busy day. You're watching Get Up on ESPN. Tonight on ESPN2, our WNBA doubleheader tips off with the defending champion Mystics trying to keep their playoff hopes alive against the Lynx. That's at 8 Eastern. And it's followed by Asia Wilson and the Aces taking on the Fever. Both games are on ESPN2 and the ESPN app. And before we wrap up, Greg McElroy mentioned it just moments ago. Schefter reporting that the Saints and Alvin Kamara are very close to working out terms of a new extension. You were saying this is exactly the time to do that.
Teams and players don't like this to linger into the season. Season's about to start. So watch this week for a few more like this. Maybe a Kenny Golladay in Detroit, DeAndre Hopkins in Arizona, maybe Dalvin Cook, Minnesota. Those kinds of deals could start getting done in the next couple of days. And if they don't, there are situations that could linger into the offseason.
The Hopkins one, obviously, he's a critical player going to the new place there. And then the running back, I've said it before, I'll say it again, get your money. If you're Alvin Kamara and you're Dalvin Cook, don't step foot on a field in anger until you have gotten that money. Dan Graziano, thank you. Thank you, everybody, for getting up with us today. We'll see you tomorrow. First Take starts now.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.